Good morning. May it please the court, my name is David Hargett, represent Mr. Denneron.
Do you want rebuttal?
I'm sorry, yes, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Three?
Three, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
The issue here is really one of whether or not assault and battery is a lesser included offense of robbery. And the potentially, and I believe that if it is, there's certainly enough evidence here that the jury could have found that it was an assault, that it was either violence or a threat of violence, and that the victim in this particular case was assaulted in that manner.
But even if it were, there were no finding instruction on assault or assault and battery that was proffered, was there?
Well, I did respond to the request for the supplemental brief, and I read over those questions quite a bit. I'm not exactly sure I know exactly what the court was trying to find out. There was an assault.
We have to, in order to determine whether the trial court erred in not granting an instruction, don't we need to look at the actual proffered instruction? It might have been improperly worded. It might not, even though you articulated to the court that you wanted, I think you used the word cascading instruction on assault and battery and assault. We don't know what the instruction would say. How can we rule on error if we don't? It's just like not proffering evidence.
Yes, and I understand that. The on appendix page 156, there was the assault instruction provided. That's the model jury instruction.
Right. Now, but not the assault and battery.
I'm sorry?
You didn't proffer an assault and battery.
That's correct.
So how would the jury then, without that instruction, how would the jury then understand whether they could convict him of assault and battery, assuming it's a lesser included offense?
Well, Your Honor, again, the answer to the question is it's assault. Battery has nothing to do with this case. That's the short answer. The long answer is assault and battery is readily, are oftentimes confused. They are two separate things, but yet they're almost always lumped together as one thing. And there's where you have the problem. The instruction that was actually proffered, originally in his argument, he asked for an assault and battery. When he actually proffers the model jury instruction, it is for assault, and assault only.
Right, so just so that I understand, we don't need to get into whether assault and battery is a lesser included offense.
I think that I did make the argument essentially about assault. The question is whether assault is a lesser included offense of robbery. Yes.
So that we would limit our opinion to whether assault is a lesser included offense.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the reason that I included assault or assault and battery in the assignment of error is because of this confusion. I mean, if you look through the case law, rarely ever do you see a distinction made between the two. And there clearly is a distinction. And I think that is where you get in a situation where the decision that we rely on in Gus from the Supreme Court that talks about whether assault and battery just generally is a lesser included offense. And then you look at Sanchez, which also was relying on Lowe, and you look at Lowe, there they're talking about whether assault and battery is a lesser included offense, but they're only focusing on battery in those cases. Which is why I think that this court, a three-judge panel of this court, has the authority to distinguish this case from those cases and or find that Gus is still controlled.
Right, but we don't need to if all we're going to decide is assault as opposed to assault and battery. Why do we need to even address those two cases?
Well, again, the reason why is because when you say assault and battery, what does that mean? When Lowe says assault and battery, what does that mean? It has to be both? Clearly, we're talking about two different offenses. And I think that when you look at what an assault is, where people get really confused is essentially every battery is an assault. And it's not a lesser included offense of a battery because, of course, they're the same punishment. But to put somebody...
Suppose I come up to you from behind and push you. That's a battery, but I'm not putting you in fear of bodily harm.
And I respectfully disagree. The first part of the model jury instruction says, and I quote, an overt act intended to do bodily harm to another together with the present ability to cause such harm is an assault.
Do you agree then that for of something to constitute an assault. Mere words are not enough. There needs to be an overt act, as the instruction has just suggested.
An overt act, that's correct. It is required.
Yet the fear factor that's an element of robbery could result from mere words, couldn't it?
Well, but it could, but it doesn't necessarily have to mean that it is. In other words, you can have an assault that has words in it, but when you're talking about putting somebody in fear or apprehension, for instance, if you say, if you don't do something, I'm going to hurt you, then that is the exact same violence that we're talking about in terms of what an assault is.
Well, if an assault requires an overt act, mere words is not enough to constitute an assault. And if we look at the definition of these two, assault versus robbery, in the abstract, it strikes me that assault cannot be a lesser included offense of robbery, because robbery, the fear factor, can be the product of mere words.
But mere words would be an overt act. Any robbery would require an overt act. You can't have a robbery without an overt act. You can't even have an attempted robbery without an overt act, which is what we have in this case. An overt act doesn't mean anything other than actual action. In other words, you might have a situation where you're at the lunch table and somebody says, give me your lunch money. Well, if they don't believe that there's any reason that they're going to cause harm to that individual, then it's not a robbery. It's just a request for money. But if you say, give me that lunch money, and there's some act that indicates that the person has the intent or has the ability to cause the harm, and it's essentially an act of violence, which is really hard to define, but essentially then it becomes a robbery.
What are the common law elements of robbery?
I'm sorry?
What are the common law elements of robbery?
Force, threat, or intimidation
acquiring property by force, threat, or intimidation.
Yes, Your Honor.
And an attempted robbery would be everything except you're not successful in getting the property.
Well, it would be one step toward the furtherance of, not necessarily everything, but of course, when you look at it, if you look at robbery, as it really has two components, the force, threat, or intimidation, and the taking of the property.
Or just grabbing the property, which is by force.
Yes, that's correct.
So when we are looking at what it is here that we're talking about is, do you separately instruct the jury on assault? Is it not inherent in any instruction on robbery?
Well, that's kind of the point. It's a lesser included offense at that point. If every act of robbery requires an assault to get there.
Why wouldn't that be? You know, the difference between the assault and the attempted robbery is, I think the Model Penal Code talks about the commencement of the consummation.
Which is very difficult to understand.
Yeah, you know, and as Professor Perkins used to say, you know, once you pass the attempt or the something beyond assault toward the commencement of the consummation, the bell is rung, and once it's rung, you can't unring it. And his point is once you pass that toward robbery, do you get to the attempted robbery, and that's inclusive of the assault because it's either by force, threat, or imitation?
I mean, I think that it does include that. I'm not sure I exactly understand the court's question.
All right, well, let's move on to something that you need to argue then.
Well, this is the argument. I mean, there's nothing else more here to really discuss. I would like to go back quickly to the question about the record. And what I thought that the three questions that were posed for the supplemental brief were really referring to was the finding instruction. One of the instructions that I referred to is the cascading instruction, where you said, if you find that it's this, then you can convict him of this. If you find this element's missing, you convict him of this. There usually is put into one instruction and overall. And I did reference in the supplement and I believe counsel for the Commonwealth did as well, the point where the trial attorney goes through and says, well, here's how I would have done this finding instruction. And he talks about it and he says, and insert the language for assault. And in that case, he's referring to the actual instruction that he proffered. So even though it would have been nice to have a nice piece of paper, we have to look at various parts of the record in order to determine exactly what he was asking. But I don't think that there's any question that the court understood that to be a question. So I just wanted to address that.
Let's assume that the court understood it, but don't we still need to look at the actual verbiage?
But we have the actual verbiage. We have in our...
I know what he argued.
Well, I would respectfully refer to what I put on page 2 of my supplemental brief, which was, I did it by letter because I thought that
we asked you to do it that way.
Okay. And the language from appendix page 139 and 140. He says, in the way that is agreed, I think that he means argued or not exactly sure, I'm going to ask that you find the Commonwealth failed to prove robbery or attempted robbery, but if you find ... essentially wording of the assault, you find him guilty of assault and battery. And then we kind of throw that battery back in there again, because again, it's always lumped together. You almost never find somebody guilty of assault.
But not correct, it's frequently lumped together, but not correctly lumped together.
I agree. And then if you did not find that he, I'm sorry, if you find that they did not prove assault and battery, you must find him not guilty. And he also asked for the same language with regard to the abduction. But
was the expectation then that counsel wanted the court to prepare the jury instruction?
No, I think that he was simply telling the court what he would have, how it would have been set up. The court didn't have any real question about that. The only question is whether it was appropriate to include it, not what the language would be. I don't think that that was any issue for the court.
And your theory is that if you have the assault and battery instruction, if they find that robbery was not there, there would be something they find him guilty of. But without that, they could only find him guilty of robbery or nothing.
Right. Essentially, that's what happened. I mean, although, of course, a slightly lesser offense of attempted robbery, which is what the case. This is why we have this very unique fact situation where the main defendant, Enoch, supposedly was there to get his money back or what have you. This, according to the evidence presented by the defense, and of course for a jury instruction, we have to look at it as light and most favorable to the defendant. And here the defendant says, I was just trying to defuse the situation. Yes, I took the knife from him, and that's why she saw me with the knife, but I didn't try to take her cards or take her money or anything. And she says that he did, but she also says that he then didn't want the stuff. So there's a lot of evidence in support of a simple assault.
Is that evidence to support the simple assault that he held the knife to her?
Yes, that's part of it, yes.
What else is there?
Well, you have multiple instances here. He had the knife, she saw the knife, and they seemed to be scared, that's the evidence, that he then put it away. She says that he didn't. He then ordered her around, which I guess kind of goes more to the abduction than the robbery.
To check the balance of the debit card.
There was a request or an order or demand to do that, that's correct. Or an explanation of where the money was. And of course, then you also have Enoch's conduct, because the jury was instructed on principle in the second degree. So if you look at all of this additional conduct, but certainly the jury could have found him guilty of robbery. There's no doubt about that. But I also say that because assault is really an act of violence, and that's probably the simplest way the intent to cause violence is really what an assault is. And so I would say, and I only have a few minutes left, so I wanted to reserve some time, but the intent to cause violence is what an assault is, and therefore every robbery is an assault. And so, because robbery, I mean, there's no doubt that robbery is an act of violence.
And you are using assault as either words that I am going to hurt you unless you, or I hurt you and take the property.
Correct.
Okay.
And I would like to reserve the remainder.
Mr. Katz?
Good afternoon.
Help us out.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth. I think it would be useful as an initial matter just to step back and talk about the term we're using. And as this court is well aware, the tort of assault and the crime of assault have been merged in this Commonwealth. And of course, the tort of assault is the putting a person in imminent apprehension of bodily harm versus what counsel is talking about, the crime of assault, the attempted battery, the overt act, with the present ability to do so. And I think our conversation ought to be rooted carefully in what simple assault means, and it can be either of those things. And counsel proceeds from the premise that assault is a lesser included offense of robbery. And just from the outset, I want to make clear, it appears that counsel's conceding that assault and battery is not before the court. The sole issue before the court today is assault. And I would submit counsel argues that Gus compels a different outcome in this case. And to the extent the Supreme Court of Virginia talked about assault and battery at all in that case, case, it was mere dicta, and it can't be understood to undo this court's precedence from Lowe and Sanchez. And looking at Lowe, as this court...
But help me, Mr. Katz, since assault and battery is off the table, why do we need to discuss Gus or Sanchez or, what's the other one, Johnson?
Well, Your Honor, I think the short
answer...
I think the short answer is that Lowe provides insight, because just as in Lowe, where the court said, where this court said that robbery may be committed in one of two ways, either through the actual use of force or by putting a person in fear of serious bodily harm. And because not every robbery required a battery can't be said to be a lesser included offense. We're looking in the abstract, it must always require the same elements. We can't say that as it relates to battery. I would submit we can't say it for the same reason in the context of assault. And just as Your Honor pointed out, you could easily accomplish a robbery by employing force, sneaking up behind a person, such that they never understood they were in imminent danger of bodily injury. And so we can say that not every robbery requires an assault, just as we can say not every robbery requires a battery. And
there's the distinction between force and intimidation. Intimidation seems to me closer to an assault, where force doesn't necessarily mean assault.
Certainly, but again, we're talking in the abstract, and unless we must say in every case it requires it, in that instance it could be a lesser included offense, but because we can conceive of an example where it doesn't require it in the abstract, it cannot be as a matter of law a lesser included offense. And so for that reason, the trial court can't be said to have abused its discretion in refusing the instruction. A proffered instruction must be a correct statement of law. And to the extent that what was offered was not a correct statement, we can't say the trial court erred. And so I think it's useful in engaging in that process to think about what assault means. I mean, it has a meaning. It's not, as counsel describes it, as vague and nebulous as he argues. These are terms with meaning, and the trial court understood that. There's no argument as to what was being proffered. I think the proffered instruction as to simple assault and the language employed by the trial court made clear from the record the trial court understood how he wished to modify the Commonwealth's instructions, and I would submit that as modified it was an incorrect statement of law. And I'd be happy to answer any additional questions.
What about the fact that the finding instruction wasn't proffered?
Well, Your Honor, as I say, I think it's clear that the trial court understood based upon, there's this exchange back and forth, and the trial court indicates, well, you know, you would propose to add additional language at the end of these things and tell me if I'm getting it wrong. And the response to that is, well, Judge, I would like to include this language as the simple assault. I think based upon that record, it's clear the trial court understood what was being asked of it.
Okay, so you don't have any heartburn over the fact that it wasn't proper?
I do not. I did not feel as though I could argue the trial court did not understand what it was being asked. I think based upon the way the trial court articulated what it thought the argument was and the follow-up to it in the record makes clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Katz. Mr. Hargan?
Your Honor, I do respectfully disagree that force is not an assault. Force is an assault. It requires an assault in order to accomplish the force. Certainly if you have the intent to harm. I mean, we're not talking about an accidental touching or something along those lines. And if we talk about, well, we don't know what the language is, well, let's look at the jury instruction that was proffered. Page 156, again, an assault is an overt act intended to do bodily harm. Intended to do bodily harm. So you can't do bodily harm in this context of a robbery anyway without intending to do it. Again, it's not an accidental situation. So that is a part of the assault instruction. That's two parts, really. Because if you look where the semicolon lies, which essentially can be read as an or in a model jury instruction, the second part talks about putting them in reasonable apprehension serious bodily injury or what have you, or fear of injury or reasonable apprehension. But it says an overt act intended to place a person in fear or apprehension of bodily harm that creates in him a reasonable fear or apprehension. That's also the second part. So from what the Commonwealth already said, you can accomplish robbery in two manners. It's the exact same two manners that are in this jury instruction. It just requires additional steps to become a robbery at that point. So that's why I said that this is what it gets so difficult to distinguish the two, because I think looking at it, every battery has got to be an assault. It's an assault right up to the point where there's actual contact. Because otherwise, you don't have the intent. You have to have the same intent to hit them or hurt them. But here, you don't actually do it with an assault. And with a battery, you actually do it, which is why you almost always see them lumped together.
Mr. Hargett, we are at that blinking red.
I did not see the blood. I apologize.